Good evening and welcome to Politics Now here on KRBD with your hosts, Kyle Johansson and Bob Weinstein. I'm Stuart White, subbing in for Deb Turnbull behind the board today. And on the outset, we'll remind you of the various things that you can call in with your comments and questions for Bob and Kyle and the topics being discussed at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. The only requirements is no coarse language.
We have a new referee. We have a new enforcer over there, Bob.
You'll have to test him.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what happens when you're in the hot seat. You got to get tested.
That's right.
I may not pass. We'll see what happens. I will say, of course, also the disclaimer that the opinions expressed on Politics Now do not necessarily represent the views of the staff, board of directors, or membership of a KRBD.
That's an important part.
Right, with an exception. My views represent one member of KRBD.
Right, exactly. With that's right. Most of the membership. That's right. Deb wanted me to make that qualifier. Also, exactly. Remind you that we are on Twitter at KRBD Radio. You can tweet to us with the hashtag PoliticsNow.
Yes.
And if you have questions or comments, so we invite you to do that as well. And, gentlemen, a lot's been going on in the world, and I think... Well, I don't want to assume where you're going to start, but I have an idea where you might start.
Go ahead.
Well, we're starting with me, because last time around, Bob dominated all four topics.
Okay.
And he tweeted out the schedule without any trying to remind everybody how he was operating last time.
But Kyle was a good sport and went along with it all. So go ahead, Kyle. What would you like to talk about first?
Well, I want to start local and big event. Talk about the governor coming to town, because that's going to segue into the legislature. So governor came down, and for me, the big deal was, aside from all the budget stuff, is that he committed to spending the remaining $90-some million on Gravina Access here in Ketchikan. And that's important, and I know you know this, Bob, because you were one of the people that did it, but there are a lot of people out there, only from Ketchikan, who went back east and lobbied for 30 years to get that appropriation. And when it came back to the state, and you might have been mayor at the time, when Palin grabbed all the money and spread it out to all these other communities and projects, $96 million left, and to the credit of Governor Walker, he has told us publicly that he's going to spend the money here locally. So that's a good move. And then I didn't go to the event, but he also spoke about his revenue plan, his fiscal plan. Dan Ortiz was there. Bert Stedman was there. I didn't go. Did you go, Bob?
No, I didn't go.
Did you go, Stuart? Were you up there?
I was not.
Okay. We all missed it. But it's important, I think, first of all, the airport stuff. I mean, what do you...
I think that's great. I mean, it's pretty clear that, at least to me, that there's not going to be a hard link to the airport, since there's 90-something million left in the account.
Right.
And conservatively, bridges are, you know, 3 or 4 times that much.
And the borough officially voted to not have a bridge. Okay. That's a little part of it, too, so don't forget that.
Anyway. But having said that, you know, there was discussion, and I think it was mentioned in the Ketchikan Daily News article, if not other news reports, that the borough has been looking at building some kind of terminal on this side so that at least people could check in their luggage and not have to haul it across. And there's a serious issue that they're addressing, and that's handicapped access to the airport, because there really isn't any. If you are incapacitated, including permanently, you know, it doesn't meet standards. And when I was mayor, I brought that up, even though the airport's a borough issue, with Southeast Transportation Director. And he basically said, well, they can ride a van over or do whatever. Well, what van? There aren't any vans.
Right. And in fact, quite a few businesses over the years from back in the late 80s have made a run at running private airport operators and to varied success. And for the last quite a few years, the last one that was running closed shop because they couldn't make it, and now there's nothing. So, yeah, those are real concerns.
So maybe they'll figure that out and have some allocation, you know, establish a fund that will pay for transportation back and forth for people to ride over once they get on the ferry and especially people
who are disabled. Why don't they just let them go free? What, do we have to have a fund and then repay vouchers? No, I mean, come on. People who are, I don't know, but I hear what you're saying. Okay, so here's my big deal, Bob. There's going to be $96 million on the street and at the borough assembly level, and a lot of big decisions are going to be made on how to spend that money, what to do. Like you said, are we going to get vehicles? Are they going to build buildings over here? I don't know who makes that decision.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I would assume the borough assembly will, with the concurrence of the state, or the borough will recommend to the state, and DOT will do it. But, you know, it's a serious enough issue. There's a big enough pot of money that hopefully the community will weigh in. You know, I'm sure the assembly will give a good opportunity as plans develop so that people can say, yeah, this makes sense for the long term. Long term, better, if not perfect, access, at least to the airport, if not other parts of Gravina.
And then things like when there's this much money on the table, you know, he basically said, I'm going to write a $96 million check, or I'm going to sign it because it's already been written. That's enough money where a lot of contractors statewide and on the West Coast perk their ears up and they look for that stuff. So what are the things are we going to do for local businesses? We had calls 3 weeks ago about how to pull some of that economy away from the docks. Small businesses all around that are chugging along, construction companies, people who manufacture things. We got folks out of Ward Cove who build, you know, they build the bus stops out of wood, stuff like that, you know, local businesses. So, I mean, is there going to be a lot of opportunity? Are there things locally that the borough can do? Do they have discounts? Do they have tax breaks? All of those sorts of things to make sure that as much of that money is spent here locally as possible. I don't know.
Right. Well, hopefully they will do that. And, you know, from media accounts, it appears the governor is very willing to work with the community. And I think that's what he came down to say, that they're going to do that. And hopefully now that a tentative decision has been made on funding, local government can get working on what an appropriate plan is. And as you said, inject some of that money into the economy before, over a period of more time, because the money's been sitting there for, you know, at least since 2008.
Right, and the money's not going to go stale. And if there's that commitment, DOT, if any department in the entire state can move money around without any, basically, discretion or oversight, it's the DOT, because they have such a broad appropriation language. They can move it so many different ways, as they claim, because we have to have the flexibility in case, you know, just in case there's a snowstorm in, you know, southeast.
But there are
times
that they budget for a project, and for, despite best intentions and good efforts, it doesn't get off the ground. So they say, well, we have a project out in Ketchikan, we're going to move some Anchorage money down there, and then vice versa. So ultimately, things get done. But this is a big enough project. I think it has not been supported largely in DOT over the years in terms of hard access to Gravina. Right. You know, they have their so-called access project in Juneau that they think money should go to. So I think it's great that the governor said, hey, this money is for Ketchikan. It was intended, and it is intended, and now it's up to the community through the borough to come up with a solid plan and something that people say, hey, this is great. We like it. It will be better than what exists today.
Yeah, and I hope all of the governments weigh in, Saxman and Ketchikan and and even the outlying areas out of Prince of Wales, you know, everybody flies out on a jet, comes here first. So a lot of opportunity for business and also to form it the way we want to have it. But good that the governor came down here, delivered that in person. I think he's more down here talking about the budget stuff. Have you heard anything that struck your...
No, just that he's continuing to, you know, advocate for his plan, not hung up on an income tax. He thinks there should be some revenue, but I think he was quoted as saying, you know, if the legislature prefers a sales tax, then he's fine with that. I'm not sure Southeast communities with existing sales taxes are fine with that, but that's a debate that they may have. But at this point, the legislature, you know, other than having some hearings on the permanent fund and their so-called restructuring, which I call terminating, a permanent termination of the permanent fund.
It is not a termination of the permanent fund.
It is. Not the fund, the dividend, the permanent fund dividend. You know, that's what the governor came up with, Lisa McGuire. You know, it's that oil, shifting it from the permanent fund to oil royalty revenues. But there isn't much talk on some broad-based income measure yet, whether it's tax, you know, sales tax or income tax. And just when I came down here, I checked the ADN, and it says there's a good chance that there'll be another budget meltdown at the end of this year.
The Adirondack Daily News is telling you that. What is their insight?
Well, their insight is apparently, and I didn't read
newspaper
the whole article,
sales possibly.
But as you know, we have an independent.
You know, come on.
We have an independent / Democrat minority, and they expressed concern today that they're very unhappy with what the majority is doing with the budget.
The House minority?
The independent Democratic House minority.
The independent Democratic House minority.
Right.
Okay. So they're upset about it.
I assume they feel that they're being excluded from the process. And as you know...
Don't they need three of those people to pass the budget?
No. They can pass the budget without it. They need three to access the...
You have to pass
CBR.
A funded budget. They have to get 30 votes this year. So anyway.
Well, if they want to,
don't pretend like the Democrats
the
are powerless in Juneau. They've got
no, they're not.
Leverage.
Right.
The House Democrats have all the leverage in the world.
Right.
They can get anything they want.
No, they can't get anything.
Got a little
they can't get anything they want. But as they did last year, they held out for education funding and ferry funding, and that was added into the budget. So it's going to be interesting this year. But any other comments on the budget? What are your thoughts on the budget?
No, not about the – I mean, the budget, we've kind of talked the budget to death, I think. But I did want to mention a couple things because we're getting up on time to start your first topic of the day. But
– I have a couple more legislative things. So,
oh, okay. Well, yeah. I wanted to throw Medicaid
sure.
suit. Is that one of them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so people might not have heard – but the Superior Court
judge, state judge,
the appeal by the Republicans.
He ruled against the
majority,
the legislative majority yesterday.
The bipartisan majority, yeah. So right. And so the Medicaid thing is going to
Republican dino majority, right?
Yeah, sure, whatever. So the long story short, the Medicaid lawsuit is not dead. It's going to the Supreme Court because they appealed to the Supreme Court this afternoon. I don't know if you saw that.
Well, I heard that they are, they're going to spend, they're using a D.C. law firm who lost the Obamacare lawsuit. So our Republican dino legislative majority felt they were qualified to, even though they're losers, to bring a lawsuit in state Superior Court. They spent $450,000 losing that. That's as much as the borough spent on their education case, and they did that over years, not just a couple of months. So now they've decided to try to appeal that to the Supreme Court. Now, of course, the Supreme Court may not take it, and the Supreme Court very seldom overturns a Superior Court decision unless there's, some incorrect finding of fact or something with the Constitution. But basically,
some pesky constitutional issue.
The judge, even though he's a state judge, said even though the U.S. Supreme Court removed the penalty, they did not remove the requirement to expand Medicaid. So it's very interesting.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I got a couple things.
Because I want to end up are you going to talk legislature?
Yeah, these are legislative things. Senator Dunleavy's bill, he decided that Planned Parenthood should not have access into public schools for sex education.
And
The Senate passed that. Senator Stedman voted against it in the first passage, and he was here, I think, with the governor, and it was excused for the second vote. So I certainly want to commend him for keeping baloney, unconstitutional ideology out of the legislature. The legislature's own attorney told them it's unconstitutional. This is not going to pass muster with the court. But Dunleavy is such a bully. As you know, he tried to, he went after the commissioner of education because he didn't approve using public money for religious schools in violation of the Constitution and among other reasons. Now he's doing this. I mean, if we're going to have legislators determine what group has access to the schools instead of letting the school boards in the communities, to me, these people who voted for that, the 12 senators who voted for that, should never complain about federal overreach, because that is state overreach using state big government to reach right into the local communities to tell the school boards who can or who can't come into a public school operated by the school board.
They're the people who pay for it. Well, Senator Dunleavy is the guy who votes to pay for all of that. So you're trying to say that the people who pay for it can't say what's going on?
Well, you know, if we want to have state control of local schools, then I guess we don't need school boards. We can just have Mike Dunleavy be – we don't even need a Department of Education. We can just have Boss Dunleavy make all the education decisions. He used to be a superintendent, so –
well, there you go.
You know, maybe he's qualified. But then the other thing I want to bring up is Lynn Gaddis, Republican from Wasilla, is it a bit, little bit of hot water?
You can tell. We need to stop for a second.
She said,
Stuart is new in here, and I want him not to feel uncomfortable by your movements.
Yeah, right. Oh, he isn't.
You see, when he gets really excited about an issue, he starts giggling, and he starts moving around.
Right.
This is when you got to watch out.
And
you got to be careful over there. Get your hand on the trigger.
And I hold my iPad. But she said, Alaska is a tough state for older folks to live in, slipping, falling, icy, so on and so forth. So if you're not working or you're on a fixed income, sometimes there's other places that are less expensive to live. The message is, hey, seniors, you're too expensive. Get the heck out of Alaska. Because she and some of her gang in the House majority, Republican majority, have decided to further cut senior benefits. And she's basically saying, seniors, if you don't like it, love it or leave it, get the heck out. And, you know, these are people who, you know, are padding their salaries with thousands of dollars of federal per diem payments and, you know, for 90 days of work. I think it's obscene for her to have said something like that. And, you know, instead of apologizing, she's claiming, oh, well, it was taken out of context. Well, it wasn't taken out of context.
Maybe it was taken out of context.
Well,
I mean, maybe she's concerned about people walking around on icy roads, you know.
Well, maybe she should leave the state.
Well, maybe
she
should.
You know, it sounds like she's a, you know.
Maybe, she might be a senior citizen someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just want to bring that up. So the legislature's doing, instead of focusing on the budget like a laser beam.
Right.
Who said that? Was it Al Gore who wanted to focus on things?
Like a laser beam.
That may or may not be a great phrase. But in any case, instead of dealing with the fiscal problem, they're monkeying around with unconstitutional measures for public schools. They're monkeying around with insulting senior citizens like me. I'm a senior. I'm on a fixed income. And she insulted me.
You're a senior citizen?
She said, but yeah, I'm 65 now. And she said, hey, Bob, get the heck out of the state. We don't need your ilk anymore.
Right.
I mean, it was almost personal.
Yeah.
Maybe it was.
I think it was personal. It sure seems like it. Okay, well, two things that I saw today that I wanted to pass on to people listening out there, because I know some folks are really interested in this. The chair of the Fisheries Committee from Kodiak made it quite clear that the proposed 12.5% tax on all fisheries landings will not get out of her committee. This was something that was being pushed. Might have been Dunleavy in the Senate side. I'm not sure. Came out of the valley, though. So fishermen out there I know have been pretty worried about that. 12.5% off the top. Coincidentally, that's what the oil tax is as well. So I don't know if that's...
So they were trying to say, well, if oil should pay, fishermen should pay.
Yeah, and everybody should pay roughly the same amount, and that's something that's been going around. But, you know, fishermen out there have been thinking about that. So anyway. And the other thing, good friend of mine, Max Grunberg, passed away. You met Max.
I have known Max not real well, but worked with him for many years.
Yeah.
He's a long-time legislator and apparently very well-regarded by...
Very well-regarded, yeah. He worked for Senator Stevens back in D.C. as a staff attorney back there during, I think it was the crafting of the land settlement, early 70s, and then served... for a few terms, he was majority leader for a couple rounds, and then got beat and ran again and won.
Right, he was there when you were there, so you served with
him. Yeah. He was on a committee, on the State Affairs Committee with me for 6 years. We sat on the same committee, and really good man, good guy for Alaska. So I just wanted to, I know folks in town, there are some folks that know Max in town here personally, and, you know, he's a good guy, so I give him honor. He's a good public servant. Good guy. Okay, so that's all I got for the legislature.
Well, good. So we can update this every time we have a show. You think they'll have a budget by the end of the regular session?
That I would be surprised. I don't know. You know, I don't know what bills are in play. I mean, I know Medicaid reform is a big deal. The budget will be held hostage by the minority no matter what. And so the likelihood that they cut a deal by the end of the regular session, I wouldn't think so. No. I think they'll go.
So another special session?
No, they'll just go long because they'll go under the Constitution rules with, say, 121 days. So they'll, you know, the statute is simply the statute. It's just a pesky thing in the way. Constitution is what really matters, so that's what they'll do, you know. They'll just keep going like they did last year. That's what I believe.
Okay. Well, I agree with you. I think they will not make it, and we'll see if they even make it if they extend it.
Right.
Because they didn't last year. They had to go into special session, if I remember right.
True enough. Yes, they did. And they, you know, well, the gas line and stuff is pretty much off the table since they missed their triggers for that.
Yep.
So it's really about the budget. And what will happen is things will get tied to that budget. It gets down to what does the minority want. I don't know what their asking price is. But, you know, we'll see.
Well, it'll be interesting. You know, the Democrats are already objecting to not the cuts. Well, they may object to the cuts that the governor made, but they're objecting to further cuts to education, seniors, and public radio that... so far, the House Finance Committee version of the budget has done. So.
Oh, you know, I read an article about that. The cuts that were up there in the House, a lot of people that are looking for big, giant cuts are a little disappointed. But I think the Senate's going to cut even more. So whatever you see in the House right now and you think this is really bad, the Senate's going to take a hold of it, and they're going to shred it even more. So right now you should feel good. No matter how bad it is, things are good. And once it goes through the Senate, it's going to be a little tougher. Anyway, anything else from Juneau?
Not that I can think of. It can always come up again if we...
Okay. We could talk about the people trying to get to Juneau.
Sure.
Big article on the front page of the paper a couple weeks ago, I think it was. Yeah, I was cleaning my birdcage, and I saw as I
That's
was...
That's when you read the paper.
As I was carrying it...
As you carefully fitted it into
As
your
I was
birds.
Carrying it off to the city of Ketchikan-owned garbage can on my front porch. I noticed that there was a big... announcement from the Sievertson campaign that actually a few things. You've got the chamber executive director / council member Julie Isom is now the chair of the campaign for state house by fellow council member Sievertson. We're going to put that on the website with a flow chart and everything. And so Julie is going to be running Bob's campaign, and Judy Zingy, who's also on the city council, is running all of his communications, because he said in the paper that everything that gets out in the public is going to be funneled through Judy's office. So, and then you've got the mayor, who owns the paper, who is obviously very supportive. So I'm thinking they can just have a campaign meeting at the city council.
Well, it sounds like they will. And, you know, a number of people called me to ask me my opinion of that. And I've known Julie for a long time, and you know, she was a great staffer for Senator Stedman, and worked with her over the years. And I understand her politics. But the question is, it's two parts. And I'll do the local government angle first, having been a council member for a long time and then mayor for even longer. So you have a council member running a partisan campaign for a fellow council member. So let's say comes up, and I'm not saying that they won't disagree on an issue. They will.
Right.
I mean,
but before you go, is the council nonpartisan?
The council's nonpartisan.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. That's important.
So that is important. However, she's running a campaign for a fellow council member. Let's say an issue comes up where they not only disagree, but he proposes something like Dunleavy did. And I'm not saying Bob would, but let's say he proposes this outrageous, unconstitutional, you know, anti-senior, whatever you want to call it thing. You know, Julie might take him on that and make him look bad. Or because, you know, which hat will the other council members have on? Will they have on their council hats and do what's best for the residents of the city of Ketchikan? Or with a campaign coming up, are they going to do what's best for the candidate? Not that they support, because, you know, everybody, not everybody, but many council members, assembly members, me included, have supported different candidates, but not inside of the room. Not a candidate inside the room running for another office. And as you and I discussed, that was sort of problematic when Bob Sievertson filed for re-election and simultaneously said he intends to run for the legislature instead of giving up his city council seat and devoting himself to that.
It's a weird dynamic.
You know, and being really clear that that's where his focus is, not on city government. But so you have that, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, people who called me were questioning the judgment of some of the people involved in that. And then on the chamber side, you know, I understand the chamber can do what it wants, and its employees can, you know, they probably don't have any policies that say that they want their employee to stay out of partisan politics. But it wasn't too long ago that, you know, people like me, Democrats, sort of viewed the chamber as an arm of the local Republican Party. And, you know, there were individuals, one of whom's no longer with us.
Is that when I was running, Bob?
Who made that? No, I don't know. But, you know, it was very active. And this sort of makes, you know, brings up those memories to me. And I guess, you know, what chamber board members should think about and chamber members is, do you want to have a nonpartisan business organization that's very pro-business and you get people, you know, throughout the political spectrum to support you, or do you want to be viewed as a partisan organization? And the question that I asked some of the people is, do you think the board would have had a different reaction if, let's say, Bob Weinstein announced he was running against Lisa Murkowski for U.S. Senate as a Democratic candidate, and the chamber executive director became my campaign manager? Would they have a different reaction to that than they're having for her supporting a Republican candidate for state house? And when I asked that question to people, there was laughter at the end of my question, because universally they said, yeah, probably we would be concerned about that and wouldn't want that to happen. And so it's, you know, it's partisan politics, and people can deal with it as they wish to and view it as they wish to. But
just weird. I mean, I know everybody involved, and I know none of them are bad people, but it's just weird. Okay. I mean, you go to a city council meeting right now. If they were meeting right now, you would have three people officially part of a state House campaign, voting at the table. It's weird. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I mean, that's three votes. You got one more vote, you control the council.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it's basic math. Obviously, there's nothing crazy going on. It's just a weird circumstance. And no matter, and that's the problem is, it gets explained to you, or to me anyway, it gets explained and it just, nothing really connects. And you just like, yeah, but it's the red face test. Like, this is just not right. I don't know. Right. I mean, call in, tell us about it. I don't know what's going on.
It's it's just a little strange. So I don't know if we have a caller. We want to take a break.
Oh, yeah. We do. We have a caller. And I'm going to ask Max to hang on the line with us for a couple minutes. So we're at about the halfway point. So we'll take a break for a couple minutes. And
I thought you were going to say it was Robert or Bob.
No.
We have Max on the line. Okay, that ought to be good.
Man, Max wants to talk about something.
Air quotes, Max.
And we'll jump into that right as we get back to the second half of things here. You're listening to Politics Now on KRBD. And you are listening to Politics Now here on KRBD Ketchikan with your hosts Bob Weinstein and Kyle Johansson. And we had a caller on the line just at the end of the first half, and we've got him on with us now, and he wants to talk Trump. So, Max, are you there? Hello? Whoa. Okay, go ahead again with that, Max.
Yeah, sure. I had two questions. The first question is, I read in the Anchorage Daily News last week that Ted Cruz's campaign didn't even have someone, like, in Alaska working for them until they sent some guy from Nevada, on Friday of last week, I think. And now he won. And I don't understand how Trump, who seemed to have a big lead in the state, was able to take it off. And I guess I'm wondering, like, is the Alaska presidential poll for the Republicans, like, too exclusive? And that's what kept Trump from winning and got the Cruz voters in the door. What do you guys think?
I don't know, Max. That's a good question. I think the important thing, and there was a interesting article in the Midnight Sun, Alaska.com today that, it was really a small turnout for all the touting that the Republican Party did, bigger turnout than 2008, 2012. Their turnout was about 16.1% of registered Republican voters, which is not only lower than any statewide election, it's lower, as they say, for any recent municipal election. So, who knows what happened to Trump here. I will say Trump, unsurprisingly to me, did prevail in Ketchikan. Kyle, you have any reaction to Max's questions?
Oh, yeah, for sure. First of all, as far as turnout goes, you're comparing a caucus with a division of elections. It's apples and oranges. You can't compare a caucus turnout percentage to an actual primary or a general election. That's ridiculous.
I did it. This Republican-leaning
you're citing it. You're citing it, and it's not a Republican-leading blog. It's owned by a
Casey Reynolds. Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. Okay. How do we even start going there? Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I heard some stories a couple days ago. Cruz was up here for a while helping Dan Sullivan. Senator, our current senator. So Cruz had been around.
Who did Dan Sullivan vote for, did he say?
I don't.
Well, there was an article, and if you read the ADN like you say you do, and you sound like you're a politically savvy kind of guy, Max, there was an article the other day.
I was wondering if you'd said, I read that none of them, Young, Murkowski, and Sullivan.
Well, they said their lips were sealed, and Lisa Murkowski would not say who she supported, and that's okay. But she also, unlike Mitt Romney, Senator Sassy of Nebraska, Joe Scarborough, did not condemn Donald Trump for his delay in disavowing support from David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan. Sort of pretend that he didn't know.
You guys are hanging your hats on delays of apologies. Well, come on,
Mitt Romney.
Nobody cares.
Mitt Romney,
Bob.
Your party's
nobody cares.
Your party's standard bearer said that disqualified.
Mitt Romney is the standard bearer now for the
he
Republican
was,
Party.
He was last year. Wow. So anyway, they said they wouldn't comment, but Dan Sullivan did. He said Trump's behavior went beyond the pale. And Max, you probably know what. Something goes beyond the pale. They've gone beyond the pale.
I don't even know what that means.
It's
I've
over.
Never heard that
they've
before.
Crossed the line.
Never heard that
it
before.
Means they've crossed the line. Well, that's a quote. But then he said, but if Trump is the Republican Party nominee, I'll support him. So I don't know how you support somebody in one breath if after in the first breath you've said he's gone beyond the pale. So, Max, I don't know. I was sort of surprised that our congressional delegation, other than Dan Sullivan, well, he didn't say who he supported. None of them would say who they supported. And that was, you know, elected senior officials in other states are saying who they support. So why do you think they didn't say anything?
Well, I don't know. It seems like they're scared of Trump. They want to support somebody else, but they know he's going to win. And they're scared, and they don't want to, you know, share with us what they're doing. I think it's crazy and hypocritical. All three of them spent a lot of time harping about. Mark Begich voted for Obama. He told us that, and these guys harped about that for years and years and years. I mean, the state just suffered. The state was just sunk by $45, $50, $60 million worth of ads telling us that over and over again. And they can't tell us who they voted for. It seems a little fishy to me.
Yeah, I mean, as a senior official, you would think they would.
These people don't have to tell you guys who they're voting for. That's ridiculous.
They don't have to say who they're voting for. They can say who they support.
No,
yeah,
it's
leaders.
The same thing.
They're
it's
leaders.
The same thing. And
they're
in
leaders.
Many states, there are more senators and representatives across the country who did not take a stand than did. So that's baloney, because I've never told anybody who I've ever voted for. I don't.
I'm pretty sure. I remember Dan Sullivan having like a TV ad about Mark Begich and Prop 1, I think, demanding to know how he voted on it. And now, so for him especially to not tell us who he's voting for here. If he ran a TV ad saying that we should know what his political opponent's ballot looks like, that's
I agree with you, Max.
Yeah,
I didn't
see that one, Max.
You know,
so I don't know
if that's true. Then certainly,
I remember it. Right, that was what everybody was yelling about. Was how are you going to vote on that? Hmm. And so if these guys are all in the ring, they're in the ring and. If Trump is good or bad or somewhere in the middle, and they don't want to share with us what their thoughts are on
right.
it or where they're leaning, especially considering that two of the guys that are running are their colleagues. If they don't have an opinion on the people they work with, that kind of
and maybe no opinion. Maybe no opinion is their opinion, meaning they have a low opinion of Cruz and Rubio. They don't like Trump, but they, as you said, Max, they don't want to tell the voters in Alaska who may support Trump, and obviously many do. It was a very close caucus, low turnout caucus. So who knows? Maybe that's the reason. But I was surprised in particular that Lisa Murkowski would not condemn the David Duke and KKK and Trump saying, well, I didn't know who it was. Or then later he goes, well, my earpiece didn't work. I mean, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Nobody
and
cares about that, Bob. Nobody
do.
Cares about an earpiece. Nobody cares about answering
I
those
care.
Questions.
I care.
You don't have anything to do.
Thank you very much for your call, Max.
My final thought is I'm surprised Trump lost and that Cruz won. Trump's got my primary vote, so surprised me. But
yeah.
Have a good night, guys.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Max.
Yeah, thanks, Max.
But
appreciate
I mean,
it.
Seriously, Cruz, this is what I heard. Cruz was up here before we got sidetracked on Sullivan, literally in Anchorage, walking around, meeting all the political players, shaking hands, and that's really valuable when it comes to these sorts of very partisan activities, which both the Republicans and the Democrats do. But when you make those connections, you know, and when you're talking about the small, real active party members, well, they look to the leadership of the party to find out what to do. And Cruz made those connections a couple of years ago. So I think that might have something to do with it. Trump just going on what he's got going on. And Trump just, hey, here we go. This is something interesting I saw today during my break. I was reading about the Ketchikan numbers and reading the story about what happened here locally. And the comments, this is what cracked me up. And I was having discussions right before I came on here about how this is like a microcosm of what's happening in the country. Because Trump comes into Ketchikan, right? I don't know if you saw him, but he was here. Anyway, whirled this up into a big whirl. Trump dominates Ketchikan, 37, I think, 38% to 20-something. So he just blew out of the water. He won Ketchikan by a landslide. Okay, so the story comes out with all the quotes from the leader of the Republican Party here in town, Trevor Shaw, and four quotes from the party chair about the winner of the party caucus. All four quotes were negative. All four of them were like, I heard... People were pissed. Oh, I heard, and this person said this, and we're not really happy. It's like this is what's happening all across the country. And the Republican Party, I mean, I just think it's great to watch. But it's just this, what happened yesterday in Ketchikan, is, and read the paper. If you haven't read the article, go down to the library here. They have free ones. You don't have to pay for it because they don't need any more money. And check it out. It's fascinating. Trump blows them away. You would think that the chair of the Republican Party would be like, our guy blew everybody away. He's going to dominate. No. The winner was attacked by the chair of the party. It's phenomenal. I've never seen anything like
that. Well, not to belabor the point, because I do want to talk about the primaries, the Super Tuesday in a second.
Oh, and the chair of the party never said who he voted for either.
Well, you would think...
Snap.
Well, and you would think now that... The caucus is over. Those people that we were talking about earlier who did not want to say who they supported would say now. Say, yeah, we support the will of the people. We know Cruz won Alaska, and that's who Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan and Don Young are going to support for president until and unless somebody else is nominated. But, you know, it's silence. And the whole thing, the article, I think, in the ADN was lip-sealed. And it's like... Hey, you're the leaders. You're partisan elected officials. Give us your opinion. And as that caller said, Mark Begich did. And you can say, well, he shouldn't have, or you didn't like who he voted for or how he voted, but he didn't shy away from telling you that. So let's get into Super Tuesday.
What else you got, Bob?
Well, Super Tuesday. We had a primary yesterday. Donald Trump won 7 out of 10 states.
Yes, he did.
Cruz won 2 yep. or 3, including Alaska. 2, I guess.
2 and
no, 3, because he got Alaska, Oklahoma, and Texas, one is home state. And Rubio got 1, Minnesota. And apparently it's considered a huge win for Trump. In fact, he's called for those two to... pull out. Carson did announce he's not going to attend the debate coming up before the next election. He hasn't quite dropped out yet, but that seems to be the message.
And the governor is trying to be vice president. He's never going to drop out, is he? Kasich?
He said today he would not accept being vice president. So, no, I don't think he'll drop out. I don't think Cruz will, nor Rubio.
And, so it's going to be a four-person race.
Rubio had a huge defeat, and obviously his tactic of trying to out-Trump Trump with the small hands and the face and the other, in my mind, very unpresidential-like comments. You know, they might have got laughter in the crowd and they may have fired up the crowd, but it didn't get them a bunch of votes.
Well, you know, the thing about Rubio is he's very young and he's got a lot of shelf life. And if you look at the history of presidential campaigns, you have a lot of people who run, and you know how it is. I mean, people do it around here in the state. They run once just to get their name out there knowing they're going to lose. They make the connections. They make the rounds. They feel comfortable. From the beginning of the campaign until today, Rubio is a completely different public speaker. I mean, he really has improved, and it's a process. I think Rubio's got some – I mean, he's not going to win this time, obviously, but he's got a bright future. He could be a candidate in 4 years. He'd be a strong candidate in 4 years.
We'll see. As, you know, the Florida primary is on the 15th, and Trump is ahead of him in the polls by double digit.
Sure.
And, of course, if he doesn't carry his home state like Cruz carried
his
home state –
well, he knows he's not going to win, Bob.
It's going to be in trouble.
He's running a marathon.
But there's an article, I think, in Politico, and it interviews a whole bunch of Republicans from Florida, some of whom were and or are Jeb Bush supporters or have gone over to Rubio. But some of them said the problem with him, he hasn't done anything. And even people who endorsed him, you know, in the last few weeks, when they said, well, what one thing can you tell us that he did as a senator? There's a blank look.
Just like when they ask about
nothing.
President Obama. Can you name one thing Senator Obama did?
What's that?
Name one thing Senator Obama did. One thing.
I?
That's
a long time ago.
One single thing.
From 8 years ago?
One single thing. The distinguished senatorial career of our president. You don't know one thing, do you?
I told you I'm elderly, and that's 8 years ago. And he's not running for president.
Jeez.
In 2008, I'm sure.
Okay, here's an easy one for you. Here's an easy question for you. We all know Rubio, as I've said. Young guy, he's got a bright future. Who's the number two bright future for the Democrats? Is it Bernie? Is Bernie the
number two bright future? No.
Is Bernie is Bernie going to burn bright in 2020?
You know, I would tend to think not. You know, we haven't talked about the Democratic side, but obviously Hillary Clinton had a good day. Bernie won, four states, and he's still in there. But, you know, if you read all the analyses today, it's going to be Trump versus Clinton, and it's going to be a very interesting election.
It's not a deep bench over there, is it?
It's as deep as the Republican bench. I mean, you have two junior senators running and a real estate developer. Really?
This is what I'd like to see.
And a retired neurosurgeon. But getting back to Rubio, Rubio's out of office. He had to choose between running for president or running for reelection because unlike Rand Paul, he couldn't manipulate the ballot in Florida. Well, so he's going to be sort of, you know, maybe he'll be like Sarah Palin and get – or Hillary Clinton and get, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands speaking to groups. But he's going to be pretty much out of the public eye. I don't think that's going to help him in 4 years. And besides, you know, if there's a Trump-Clinton race, it's likely that whoever wins, and I don't think it's going to be Trump at this point with all the Republicans defecting or not voting, that Hillary Clinton will be in there for 8 years.
Goodness.
So, you know, look what happened to Sarah Palin 8 years later. It's like, who?
I would like you to – I don't know what is not going to happen first. Either you're not going to identify one accomplishment of Senator Obama or he's getting on the Internet. You don't get to do that.
I told you, it's 8 years ago. I don't memorize Senate records. If he were a candidate now, I could tell you what his record as president was when he ran for reelection. Rubio has no record of getting anything done in the Senate.
Rubio has never been president. You are correct.
Right. And never will be.
Wow. Those are big words. So you think he's going to disappear between now and 2020? You don't think there's possibly any place the darling poster child of the Republican Party is going to land for
the
2 years?
Well, it depends. You know, if he was and is today the establishment, Republican establishment darling.
Right, exactly.
Which is maybe why we didn't hear from our elected senior federal officials, because they like Rubio, even though obviously based on the results and they had the polling information, Rubio didn't do very well in the Alaska primary, and they didn't want to get out in front of a loser, perhaps.
Or perhaps they just have the right not to tell you who they're voting for.
Oh, they do have the right. People, you know, I totally understand that.
Hey, I did want to touch on two things. We had a couple calls. We can use their name on the air, right? Did they speculate that we could or no?
The one that called about transportation asked not to be identified.
Oh, okay. So anyway, we had two calls. One from, I won't even say his name, guys, because I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble. But anyway, a gentleman, a very able gentleman indeed, had mentioned that the 12.5% tax was only on comfish, not on sportfish. There you go. That's rail belt control on the taxes, because, you know, you're not going to get, the last thing that's going to happen is sportfish or any of that side is going to get taxed, which I guess is good for a lot of our folks here. But it's really being driven by the Kenai folks. Anyway, so that's interesting. 12.5% that bill was on comfish landings only. And then the senior center apparently provides for seniors and... You took the call, Stuart. What was
it? Yeah, if you call in advance, the senior van will transport...
Yeah, seniors over 60 and qualified people with disability.
Right, and that's...
Of any age.
That's a good point, but let's say somebody's coming from Seattle and they're getting off the plane and they're disabled, and they may or may not be from here, they may or may not know about that, and or somebody's had surgery, can't walk, how do they, you know...
Anyway, we had those two callers and wanted to make sure those folks knew we got their message. And yeah, it is interesting, the airport being the only airport owned by the state, operated by a municipality, the entire state. Such a weird little connection there. Bob is frantically trying to look up
No, I'm not frantically
Google Obama senatorial accomplishments. Okay. So anything else on the docket, Bob? We got a few minutes left.
No, but I will say in 2007-08, he sponsored 71 bills. He co-sponsored 434 bills. So like the Coburn Obama Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act of 2006, Or the Lugar Non-Cooperative Proliferation Detection Interdiction Assistance and Conventional Threat Reduction Act of 2006. So,
both of those noted internationally as groundbreaking.
And two of the bills he sponsored became law. Marco Rubio, zip. No record. And he has the worst attendance record of any U.S. senator. He's number 100 out of 100. He doesn't show up for work.
He's busy
campaigning.
But he collects
his paycheck and gets his Obamacare insurance.
He's busy campaigning.
Yeah.
Just like Mark Begich did when he was a senator. Right?
What's that?
Did he not collect his paycheck every 2 weeks?
I'm sure he did. And he worked very hard for it.
Oh, there you go.
He had a very good voting record and very good attendance record.
Excellent.
Marco Rubio, number 100.
Maybe his kindergarten teacher didn't really just... put it into his head how important attendance actually is. And sometimes, you know, if you're tardy by a certain amount, number of minutes, your teacher will just mark you absent, even though you were actually there. We don't know how the Senate rules work. We didn't work in the dark cloak backroom deals like you and your boss back in the day.
Anyway, so what else you got? We got a couple minutes left here to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
Is that it?
You want to talk about?
No, I think that's about it.
So do you think Trump and or Clinton are going to get derailed from their respective nominations at this point? What's your take after yesterday?
Well, I mean, Clinton has been a shoe-in for the entire, I mean, come on. We talked about that the first show, that it was all just a big joke. Of course Clinton's going to be there. And as far as the Republicans, yeah, I mean, Trump, unless something happens, but he's bulletproof, you know? I mean, people don't care, and that's the whole point. People don't care that he said something outrageous. People don't care that he did that. People are tired of all this little bickering about per diem, Bob, and things like that. Nobody cares. I mean, obviously it needs to be fixed, but nobody really cares. They're worried about the big issues.
And Trump will... build a big, beautiful wall paid for by the Mexicans.
Yeah.
Yes. You think so?
Well, sure. I mean, come on. It's, if you really think about it, if everybody that got up and had to leave the country, and this isn't mine, this was stolen from the wonderful, beautiful Tony. If everybody picked up two bricks on their way out and set it down, that's like 27 million bricks. That's a start. Right? These are the kind of things Trump has thrown out there. I'm just saying.
Well, it should be a very entertaining campaign, and, you know, my,
He's appealing to everybody,
we'll
Bob,
see.
In Vermont. In Vermont, people with college degrees and higher and graduate degrees voted for Trump.
And we'll see how he pivots.
All over the country.
We'll see how he pivots.
Smart people, dumb
campaign.
People, rich people, poor people. It doesn't matter.
They all love him.
He's resonating with everybody.
He's
crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, right.
It's the golden hair.
Well, we'll see what happens. Yeah, I think in a race with Clinton, she'll win. We'll be, you know, 5-6%.
Did you say they just gave immunity to her staffer? Or they just the FBI just said, hey, tell us everything, we won't prosecute. We promise.
Great. Well, what about Trump? His case,
it's coming.
Trump University case didn't get thrown
out
of
court. What's the backup plan for Clinton going
to
jail?
What's the backup? What about Trump?
Oh,
what about Trump University?
What's the backup plan for Clinton going to jail?
Clinton go to jail? What about Trump and Rubio
what's
and Cruz going to jail?
Who's your number two guy in the Democrat Party?
Me.
Oh, jeez.
All right.
Stuart.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And that's going to wrap things up for tonight. And you've been listening to Politics Now here on KRBD with your hosts, Kyle Johansson and Bob Weinstein. And we'll be back with you in a few weeks. And as always, you can call in with your questions or comments to the station or tweet them to us at KRBD Radio. It's about 7:31, and we're going to head into JoCo's Wednesday Night Rockin' Blues.